When it comes to aging, nothing makes us laugh like Molly Shannon's endearing Sally O'Malley character from SNL triumphantly stating, "I'm proud to say I'm 50 years old. I'm not one of those gals who are afraid to state her real age. And I like to kick, stretch, and kick."
We love the character for embracing her silver years with panache. But for many gay men, aging can be filled with fear and worry about loneliness, isolation, and lack of visibility. Today, therapist and relationship expert Damon L. Jacobs joins us to take a look at turning 50 with power, purpose, and pleasure. Damon just hit the 50-year mark himself and wrote a fabulous collection of blogs on growing older with style, inspired by the movie The Breakfast Club.
Plus, fearless, quirky, silver gay men we love.
Billy Porter comes out as HIV positive.
And when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Who said it first? Cher? A bodybuilder? A drag queen? Or a fascist? Play our game and find out. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Don't you forget about me.
You know it, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Sally O'Malley. I'm proud to say I'm 50 years old. I'm not one of those gals who's afraid to hide her age, unlike some other gals. And I like to kick, stretch, and kick! I'm 50! 50 years old! 50 years old! 50,
yeah.
50,
okay,
50.
All right.
Hello!
Hi, this is Fausto.
And Mark from Feast of Fun. Happy birthday to you!
Well, thank you! Do I sound different now that I'm 50?
You sound marvelous.
This is Damon L. Jacobs, damn it.
Damon L. Jacobs, who?
Don't
you forget about me. I'll be alone dancing, you know it, baby.
Tell me your troubles and doubts. And your joyful things.
You know, yes. That Simple Minds song actually is very appropriate in talking about aging, even though The Breakfast Club was a coming-of-age story of five teenagers who are stuck in detention on Saturday.
But it kind of feels like we're in that right now, right? Because we're still aging and we've been stuck in this COVID detention, right?
I'm here with Molly Ringwald and she just won't shut up. Emilio Estevez, let's go to the lockers. And
does Ally Sheedy have her dandruff and frosted flakes?
Yes, she does.
Okay.
It's all over the table.
All over the table. What a classic film.
What were your thoughts about the movie when you were a kid?
Well, I'll tell you. So I was 14 years old when that movie, The Breakfast Club, came out. And I went to see it in theaters like five times at the Marina Del Rey in Los Angeles. And I remember loving it, but just being horrified by that line that Ally Sheedy's character says toward the end. It's unavoidable. And they say, what's unavoidable? And she says, when you grow older, your heart dies.
Aww.
And that was very much the thesis of all those John Hughes films at the time, like The Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. They all kind of have that theme that when you get older, you become this heartless, materialistic yuppie that doesn't care about people anymore. And I just remember thinking, no, it doesn't have to go that way. It doesn't have to go that way. And turning 50 for me has been a milestone for a lot of reasons. And one of them was, which, see, I proved Ally Sheedy wrong because I think I still have a heart. I think it's still beating.
Aww. Well, you know, the funny thing about John Hughes movies is that he started his career doing movies about adults. So he went from like adults to like college students, then teenagers with like
Pretty in Pink
and The Breakfast Club. Then he started doing movies about babies. Look Who's Talking.
And then,
and then he did movies about sperm and ovums talking to each other.
So he went like reverse.
Yeah, he's like a reverse aging casting person.
So he really was not embracing this whole aging thing that the rest of us are going in the other direction with.
Yeah, he's no longer with us. But
yes, that's true.
But you know, that's the thing about those movies, I guess, what spoke to a lot of people was that we're all sort of misfits and outsiders. And in order to grow up, we need to come to terms with the fact that we're flawed human beings and to love and embrace our flaws as opposed to like fighting against them.
Right. Well, as a kid, you know, as a high school kid, he made being weird really cool. So it was okay to be weird. And he made that universe like it's okay to be a freak and to be a weirdo and to not fit in with the popular kids. And you could still be really, really happy and have a lot of fun.
Although I'll tell you this, I watched Weird Science many times and I try to reverse engineer the guy from Solaflex using like Ken dolls and a can of Coca-Cola and a broken computer, and it did not work.
You needed a greasy pork sandwich and a dirty ashtray for that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, that didn't work. I would have engineered a version of Peter Reckle if I could have during that era.
What would you like for me to do? It was a very erotic film, though, Weird Science, because like they made this basically a woman who will have sex with them, these two nerds.
Can of wax on the nipples, whips and chains, you know.
And then she's kind of a supernatural force. Like, she's not just a sex doll. She's like a goddess. And she transforms everybody's lives, including the bullies, for the better.
Mm. Yep. That's the power of Kelly LeBrock.
Yeah. So you were inspired turning 50 to write a huge collection of life lessons about turning 50, and you dedicated it to The Breakfast Club.
50 life lessons for 50. Turning 50.
Yes.
Well, 50 life lessons, things that I've learned, because the older I get, the more freedom I feel. The older I get, the more childish I feel, really, to be honest with you. I think I'm going sort of in a reverse direction as far as aging, because I was so serious as a kid. I was so afraid as a kid. And now I feel like I have all these playful opportunities to experience pleasure, but purpose and peace within all that, too. And I thought, okay, if I'm doing something or if I've got a way of doing this, I just want to share this with my friends, with my clients, with the world, to say, I'm turning 50, damn it. And here are the 50 reasons why I'm really, really, really super happy about that. So I wrote this series. I made myself write this series and kind of took on more than I could take on, because I ended up, I mean, they ended up being longer than I anticipated, but it was 50 lessons in 50 days. I forced myself to write 50 lessons in 50 days. And they're currently up at the 50lessonsof50.com. If you look at the number 50, 50lessonsof50.com. And what I hope they might do is, if anyone's thinking about this or fearing getting older or disliking their body for any reason, that they might go to this page and see if there's a few things that we can talk about that might change that.
Damon, do you feel that, you know, particularly for gay men, that there's an emphasis on youth culture and not aging as opposed to like the general population? Or do you think it's just kind of the same for everyone?
Oh, I definitely think there's a strong, strong pressure within the gay male community to not age. And I find that so ironic, given that we are the generation, those of us that are 50 and older, we're the generation that have now survived two pandemics. We survived the worst of the AIDS crisis, and now we've survived COVID. And I think that gives us a lot of reasons to be celebratory about the fact we're still here. But so many facets of the culture informs us that we, quote, should, I'm putting in quotes, should be young and thin in order to be powerful and desirable. And it's such a weird juxtaposition, because, I mean, what were we supposed to do? Not get older? I have so many friends who didn't live long enough to see, have the privilege of turning 50. And what a slap in the face it would be to them if I cursed this or said that there's anything wrong with embracing my body or my age or my spirit at this point in life. You know, they would have changed places with me in a second if they could have.
Do you feel like it's changing, though? Are we embracing that more than we did like 20 years ago? Because I really feel like in the 90s, especially, it was like all queer media was that hairless twink everywhere you looked.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think thanks to social media and apps like Scruff, there is more of a normalization and erotization of all different body types, and Growler, that there are all these different images now of really emboldened, empowered, sexy men out there of all weights, of all sizes, of all races, of all ages, showing that you can be sexually empowered at any age, race, or size or weight. And I think that's a good thing. That's out there. That's a lot different than when I came out 32 years ago in West Hollywood, and pretty much the only images available were the skinny, young, white, hairless twink that was supposed to be the prototype of who you were supposed to be.
I don't know. Part of it is like with all these dating apps, you start to realize it's not just twinks that are miserable. It's everybody's unhappy.
What do you mean?
Well,
yeah, you know, part of it is like, you know, we have this like life is a buffet and everybody's starving. I think mm-hmm. that's Auntie Mame said. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, you know,
most people starving.
Most people are starving. And part of me is like, you know, we're so sex driven that we're defining our happiness by our desirability to be wanted sexually.
But as gay men, that almost, for a lot of gay men, that comes with the territory, because our identity, political and social identity, is based on sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so that automatically translates that men would internalize this idea that your value, your worth is based on your physical fuckability.
I love that term.
What I do is challenge that to mm-hmm. say that, A, your true value, beauty, and worth mm-hmm. is not about your body. It's not about the body in a physical form. That's much more of an mm-hmm. energy, of a spiritual form. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when we're in the realm of the body, it would be wrong to say that nobody is interested in having sex with me. Nobody is interested in being naked with me. There is a pot for every lid. There is every single man out there who is interested in sex. There will be someone out there that will be interested in you. But the one thing I know for sure is if you walk around in the world and you think, oh my God, I'm so disgusting, I'm so old, I'm so undesirable, no one's going to want to fuck me. If you put that energy into the world, you will create an energy where that becomes true, mm-hmm. where people are going to want to get away from you when you feel that way. So it becomes what we call this self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's where I try to stop people, to say, don't make this a cycle. Don't participate in the self-fulfilling prophecy of being unfuckable.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about fuckability a lot in your lesson number 12, fearing fat is a gay rights issue.
Yes.
And we've seen over the past, you know, 20-some years, the embracing of bear culture and people loving their bodies for who they are. But how do you identify as, like, the fear of being fat as a gay rights issue?
Well, because I read Fat as a Feminist Issue. It is a classic book that came out in the 70s. And it's a really, really great feminist book that I didn't read until the late 80s mm-hmm. when I was in school. And it really traces this idea of how sexism and misogyny informs women on so many levels that there should be less of you. Again, I'm mm-hmm. saying should in quotes. Yeah. There should be less of you. Literally, that is a symptom of misogyny, to say you should be physically less than who you are. You should take up less space, literally. And you should definitely make less money and not have a voice and a right to vote and a right to get a safe abortion. All of these things are rooted in misogyny. And as mm-hmm. I became a therapist and worked within the gay community over the years, I thought there's a lot of similarities going on here. Mm-hmm. In some ways, we're very active and we're really good at accomplishing a lot of advances socially and politically and medically. But there's still, on my therapy couch, almost every day, at least once a week, there's someone who is terrified of gaining weight. Mm. And straight men don't usually have that. So that is not a coincidence to me.
So
that,
like,
is not
an accident. Customers like Roy Halston, basically?
I haven't seen that yet.
Damon, I'm afraid of getting large and mm-hmm. thick here. Look at my wrists. Mm-hmm. I have done.
But what is that message?
I've like, done kilos of cocaine and I have not lost a pound. What's wrong
You're
with me?
You're just eating faster, that's all.
Right. So we're always being told be less than who you are. You should, again, mm-hmm. should in quotes, you should have less wrinkles. Mm-hmm. You should be less old. You should weigh less. It's always like be less mm-hmm. of who you are. And that is the message we get as gay men over and over and over again. And that is what I'm resisting. And that is what I'm putting out, is that when we embrace our bodies, not only does it feel good, not only is it a lot more fun, but it's also an act of political resistance.
Give me some advice here. I'm going to ask you to put on your therapist hat, even though you probably always have your therapist hat on. Is I was recently told by somebody that I was too much. I was too much to take into, that my presence was too much. And
what, you're like Mr. Green Christmas? I'm too much.
Exactly. And it was just like, and it was hard for me to kind of respond to that, because, you know, in the capacity in my role is like, I'm supposed to be a caretaker of something, and like, and them telling me that kind of thing. And this is coming from a straight white guy. So in my mind, it seemed like there was a tinge of homophobia there. And then I read your blog posts and saying that, you know, there should be less of you as a symptom of somebody's homophobia. And I was just like, what's a good way to contend with that? Cause so many gay men out there or queer people have been told, like, could you just not be like that? Or, you know,
dial it down. Dial it down. Your voice is too much.
Yes.
Well, I would, if again, depending on the context, but just name it for what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a straight white guy asserting myself, would you think I'm too much? But since I'm a gay person, you're saying I'm too much. Mm-hmm. I'm too much for you. Well, what does that mean? Maybe you're not being enough. Or maybe I threaten you because I'm empowered. Or maybe you're scared of being gay. And when you see a bold, fierce, strong gay man like me, it scares the shit out of you because you know inside you there's one of me.
Well, so I think part of it is too, that. Is, I mean, you know, part of it is like, I'm worried that you're going to do to me what I've done to others. And when I say to you, you're too much, what I'm really saying is you're not giving me unbridled, unrestrained ability to do as I please, regardless of the outcome and harm to others.
Right. Well, I think it's when people say that, it's like, oh, well, you're too much, meaning you're threatening my power. Like, as a straight person, I'm used to having unfettered power and ability to shame you. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowing me that power over your mind and over your spirit. So you're being too much right now. That's what I think is going on. Now, if we want to take it to a deeper level, like sort of a more Jungian level, sexual level, it might be like too much, meaning, oh, I'm afraid you're going to penetrate me because you're a fierce, strong, beautiful gay man. And I'm afraid you're going to try to get inside my asshole. And I'm scared of that because I'm going to like it. That's where the Jungians might take that one of like the archetypes and fear of anal sex.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to share that part of the information to them.
Well, this is an interesting thing because, you know, especially with the Black Lives Matter movement, we've seen a shift in the discussion of how we ask for equality. Mm-hmm. And in the past, you know, there's a human nature that when you point out injustice or inequality, the people who are participating or reinforcing that inequality double down, mm-hmm. right? So if you tell somebody like you are being conned by Trump, they don't respond by saying, oh, you're right. They say they double down. They're like, I love Trump even more to prove you wrong that and to basically say that you're lying to me because you're giving me evidence that Trump has been basically harming me. And so with what's interesting that I'm starting to see is that marginalized people, at least in the United States, in this past couple of years, have had a profound shift where we're no longer debating our tone. We are asking for equality. And if you're able to come on board, great. If not, you're going to be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And still, the problem that I see, though, with that approach is that it's still having that psychological reaction where when you tell somebody you're harming me or you're being misled or you're being deluded, they double down. Mm-hmm. How can we as marginalized people, as gay men, you know, I even hate using the word marginalized people, as different people, can we effectively create change and at the same time not feel like we're having to tone police ourselves?
I think it works on a lot of different levels mm-hmm. because what you're describing is Black Lives Matter, which I think is a beautiful statement, is a beautiful movement. And Fausto, the slogan itself follows something you told me 11 years ago when you said that if you want to be an effective person with slogans in the world, that it's important to be affirmative, not negative.
Mm-hmm.
So Black Lives Matter is not anti-racist. It's not negative. It's an affirmation that Black lives matter.
As opposed to stop killing Black people, it's Black Lives Matter.
Asset-based
And you,
activism.
I think, really hit that on the head when you told that always stuck with me. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's being so embraced by so many political movements with so much diversity is because it's such an affirmative and inherently loving and valuable statement. Black lives matter. So on the political level, it's there. It's affirmative, it's loving, and it's powerful, and it's strong. But I still think there's room on the one-on-one level or the smaller level is to have conversations that need to, if you're going to possibly flip someone's mind, those conversations need to be nuance. They need to involve empathy. They need to involve reflective listening. A lot of therapists like myself are kind of used to doing this in the therapy room when we're dealing with resistance or when we're dealing with clients who are actively reluctant to engage in treatment. How we try to engage them is by creating a space where their power is recognized, where they're treated as individuals and respected, even if we're not agreeing or seeing eye to eye on everything, and seeing where we do have common ground and where we might be able to build on a common ground time we do share. But that's a much more like individual nuanced process than an outdoor, fierce, powerful protest. And I think there's room. There's actually needs to be both.
Yeah. But part of it is like I'm noticing, you know, in terms of addiction, confronting an addict usually gets them to double down on their addiction.
Oh, yeah.
When you're confronting somebody who's an anti-vaxxer, progressive or conservative, there are anti-vaxxers who are both of all shades of the political spectrum, but especially conservative. When you tell somebody's like, hey, the science supports vaccination for COVID, they're like, my body, my choice, even though they're anti-choice or whatever in the past. And so on. This kind of like harmful behavior, when being confronted with it, people double down. And so one thing that I've felt like was been useful for me is to give that person who has that harmful behavior space to being heard and understood. Mm-hmm. And I think about the study about, you know, the rats that were in the cage and they were given like cocaine. sounds like an exhibit at Studio 54, but you know, it was, the rat's name was not Liza Minnelli, and and so they gave these rats cocaine and they were living in a cage, and of course the rats chose the cocaine and died because they were in cages. But when they put the rats in the rat equivalent of rat paradise, so they gave them a giant elaborate space to live in, other rats to interact with, things to do and things to see and adventures to go on, the rats didn't always choose cocaine.
Usually did not.
They had life to live. And usually, you know, and there's a Japanese word for this when you're reclaiming, it's kind of like reclaiming my time, is that describing internet addiction. So people who stay up late on their phones looking at what, you know, hookup apps or social media or reading your blog on self-help, ironically, or listening to this podcast, they're robbing themselves of health and wellness because they feel like they don't have control over their body and their time during the day. And so when we're talking about fat liberation, we have to address capitalism, because ultimately capitalism is a malevolent force that is seeking out to control your body, your money, your time, and your soul.
Absolutely. Ding, you know? Ding. I'm on board. If I was in your home studio, I'd ring the bell.
Here,
yes.
It is.
Make it loud and
you
proud.
You got it.
And so this is like what I felt like, you know, and maybe you and I are like, we're so like on the same wavelength, Damon, because it's like, I've been, you know, I'm obsessed with bodybuilding and fitness people. And at the same time, I'm like looking at them and I'm just like going, you have a lot of like, you know, self-love and self-grow to do. Mm-hmm. And Mark and I usually play this game. It's like, did a Nazi, a bodybuilder, Cher, or a drag queen say this quote? Like, you know, no. What is that? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Who said that? It was Nietzsche. The fascist philosopher.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, or what is it? What the sweat quote that, well, I'm giving it away, but Cher used to do.
You have to have this written down.
I know, I have to have it written down.
So let's table it for another time.
But we'll table it for another time. But the whole point of all this is that, like, you know, it's part of it is like dealing with trauma and self-care sometimes is a response to, like, you know, fascism and self-aggrandizement are kind of tied to each other. And so if you go and like on Instagram and look at all these fitness influencers, they're all like, you know, my body is marble and I am sculpting it. And you know, it's all these like very pandering phrases that don't really address or speak to the struggle.
Aphorisms
that people are doing, you know. And so I wanted to basically start a separate podcast called Let's Grow Big Together, you know,
LGBT.
Big in spirit, LGBT, where we sort of talk about, you know, we address a lot of the shared trauma, but also the shared triumphs of, you know, our bodies as LGBT people.
Well, I think it's so interesting that we've our community often does that. And I think fitness is so important for mental health. Mm-hmm. And again, for the experience of feeling you are in a healthy body and a healthy mind. But when it comes at the price of addressing the spirit and the mind, that's where I think people sometimes get into trouble. That's where I think they sometimes get into some unhealthy patterns, or maybe start taking unhealthy supplements or drugs in order to enhance their body in a certain way. Because what they're thinking is, okay, if my body looks a certain way, then I'll be safe. Then I'll be happy. Then I'll feel good about myself. And it makes sense that since most of us were deprived of feeling safe and loving and joyful when we were kids and grew up in a time when we didn't have the ability to be out and proud and still be accepted, that we now use other methods to do that in our adulthood. And I think when we go too far with fitness and with perhaps unhealthy ways of building body and say, well, now my likability, my fuckability depends, is contingent on looking a certain way or being a certain weight, that's kind of a one-way road to suffering, because our bodies are always, always changing. Mm-hmm. Our metabolisms are changing. We're aging if we're lucky enough to age. And it's not a matter of that being necessarily bad. It's just saying we can work with our mind's empowerment, and we can shine in our spirit and with our body at the same time.
Yeah, because Americans are at risk for working out too much.
Well, is that at this point, I don't know if that's true. I mean, COVID sort of put a wrench.
I mean, part of it is like, you know, like it's interesting because I feel like the fat acceptance movement, mm-hmm. and bodybuilders, drag queens and transgender athletes or transgender people all share the same in common, is that they like want to be able to control and shape what their bodies look like. Well, and we have this very puritanical idea of like drugs are bad, you know.
You have the body God gave you, and just keep it the way it is.
And so
you're perfect the way you are.
Shaming people, or shoulding, as you say, you know, shaming people into accepting the problems they face and not even seeking out like a physical therapist to mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people's employers will pay you for a physical therapist to overcome the chronic pain that you're suffering from being at work. And people mm-hmm. like don't even realize that they have all these tools and all these resources. And so they just like at peace live in chronic pain. And so they get grouchy. The world's a dark, gloomy place. And then they make Mark miserable.
No, well, but that they're what they do then is when they're grumpy and miserable is project. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So that means that for most people in this culture, when we're feeling grumpy or miserable or upset or scared or traumatized, we're not encouraged to say, maybe I can go a little deeper with this within and maybe talk about this with a therapist or get some help or listen to Feast of Fun so I can learn tools for dealing with this. Instead, we're conditioned to say, oh, it's your fault. It's this guy on social media's fault. It's Mark's fault. It's Fausto's fault. You know, it's this loud, annoying guy named Damon's fault. It's like people are taught to project their anger and insecurity and doubt onto others. That is such a normal part of American culture and such an unhealthy part of our society. And in the gay community, you know, it's no different from in this respect, no different from the rest of the community. So we do that, and people do that. But what you can do and what Mark can do and what I know I need to do daily is just make sure I'm not taking in that projection. People can project on me anything they want to. They've been doing that my entire life.
Yeah.
Because I'm also a little touch for a lot of people. I've always been annoying. But
well, yeah, but if you're involved in HIV activism, you are a target for a lot of people, right?
Absolutely.
From many different facets within the community and from without.
But so even before that, I was a target.
How do you not take that kind of stuff in? How do you leave it at the doorstep of your mind?
Well, I defer to the one and only great Cher, who taught me a long time ago upon winning the Academy Award for Moonstruck, did this incredible interview with Barbara Walters. And she said, you know, it hurts me if people don't like me. It hurts me if other people don't understand what I'm doing and if they're angry with it. But this is my one and only life, and this is not a dress rehearsal for anyone else. This is the only life I know. It's more important what I think of me than what other people think of me. And she said that in 1988 at the time that she was winning the Academy Award. And as a 17-year-old who was just, that's actually why it came out, actually, when I was 17, was because of that speech. And I felt like, okay, you know, I had been a target of anger and projection from literally the first day of my life as a baby from someone in my family. So I had been used to being the recipient of misguided anger and hatred. And I had learned how to live with that at such a young age. And although I'm not saying that's good and I wouldn't wish that on anyone, it certainly taught me how to do it. And it prepared me in life for the anger and projections that were to come. So that now when people, especially strangers, tell me, you know, you're too much or you shut the fuck up or I'm going to come kill you with a stick. It's like, it doesn't really bother me. I don't take it personally because I know who I am. Mm. I know what I'm about. The people close to me, you guys know what I'm about. My yes. friends and family know what I'm about. And that's what really matters to mm-hmm. me. I don't really take in personally what anyone else thinks or says. I certainly will listen if someone has a legitimate complaint or criticism of something I've done or said. I want to learn from that. But if it's just the same old stuff, like, you know, you're annoying, shut up, you're too much, you're a whore. It's like, that doesn't really faze me at all.
Mm. Who said this? Don't let age change you. Change the way you age.
Oh.
Nazi, bodybuilder, drag queen, or Cher?
Drag queen.
Cher said it.
Of course.
Oh, wow. I can't believe I missed that because she sometimes talks about how much she hates aging.
Well, you know, there is a difficulty in aging. There is challenges, you know, and you do talk about it, you know, catastrophizing versus joyfulizing.
But I mean, Cher's like fighting the process every inch of the way with plastic surgery.
5 minute planks.
I mean, she can do planks for 5 minutes, she claims, mm-hmm. which is really impressive.
She's tiny, though, right? So it's not like
a lot of weight, but still. You know, she's like, well, you guys keep my name out of your mouth.
Well, she is amazing. Yeah. And she's done more, I think, to set an example of healthy aging than most others. I mean, I think the only other person who I can look up to for healthy aging in that respect in publicly is Dolly Parton. And they're pretty much, they're like only 5 months apart.
But these are women who are like masking the visible signs of aging. And like, I get this blowback, this pushback. Mm-hmm. From my family, who are all very feminist, very body positive people. And they're like, Fausto, why can't we show us how you really look? And I'm like, this is how I really look. But they, mm-hmm. I guess they don't like the fact that I had my eyebrows microbladed. Is that the term, right?
That's the term.
Whereas basically you put little tattoo lines. Semi-permanent tattoo. Basically they're doing like they're putting like eyeshadow in your eyebrows to make mm-hmm. it look thicker. And, you know, okay. I do get my, like, roots done. And, you know, I pursue a very aggressive fitness regimen to mm-hmm. the point that my mother's like, you spend too much time in the gym, you know.
Okay, but when you're doing these things for yourself, how does that feel?
Fabulous. I had somebody come up to me and they were like, and I was quoting Lauren Bacall. So they said, it was like, you're very muscular. And I said, yes, isn't it wonderful?
Okay. And when you feel fabulous, how does that affect the energy? How does that affect the health steps you take in your life?
Well, you know, part of it is like, I'm more likely to go to bed early or at a reasonable time when I feel like there's something that I'm looking forward to doing in the next day. Mm-hmm. And so much of my life is routine. That it's difficult, you know, and I'm the biggest person who suffers from that, you know, the Japanese steal back your time syndrome in the middle of the night, you know, and ironically, I deal with technology all the time. And so I'm like giving advice to people like, don't sleep with your phone next to your bed, but I'm sleeping with my phone next to my bed.
Mm-hmm. Fausto, he's like, don't fight with people on the internet. And he's always fighting with people on the internet. And I'm just like, if I were doing that behavior, what would you say to me? And he'll be like, you're right. And then he'd go right back to it.
Okay. So that's a, you know, it's a reminder. None of us are perfect. Right. But the fact is, when you feel fabulous, you're more likely to take healthier steps that enhance the quality mm-hmm. and quantity of your mm-hmm. life, which directly helps Mark and Jesse and me and all the people who love you and are glad you're around. So it's a win-win all around. Now, if taking care of your body the way you do helps you to access that, what's the problem? I don't think anyone has a right to judge that or sit in judgment of that. what I would just say from a mental health perspective is that just recognize these are means to an end, right? The eyebrows, these are all means to an end, the ends being feeling fabulous. And that what I encourage people to do is just make sure we have a vast toolkit of ways that we feel healthy and fabulous and alive, that it's not just located in one particular area of the physical. I think, again, Cher and Dolly Parton, even though they've had incredibly extensive plastic surgery, obviously, they're also facing pressures in an industry that we don't typically face as men, of men who don't have that level of fame and pressure put on them. Mm-hmm. You know, they've made a lot of their physical decisions from a professional standpoint, because that's all they knew, because no one else existed like them. There are no other women in their 70s other than Tina Turner going out there and kicking ass every year.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, so, you know, in terms of like pop stars in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, with the exception of David Hasselhoff, are there any men, you know, I mean, Billy Joel.
Tom Jones, I think still.
Tom Jones. They're all plucked and pruned and, you know, pumped. And
Dolly said, what did she say? I'm going to look as young as my plastic surgeon will allow me to. You know, she's like, I'm putting it out there. Right.
And it's there's unfair. No shame. I mean, when you look at Mick Jagger or Keith Richards, I mean, they look like,
Do I have to look at them?
You don't have to. No one wants to, but they still can make. You know, in a typical year, they can make a lot of money either touring or doing special concerts or doing whatever. They haven't ever clearly had to address their looks in order to succeed in the music industry, whereas beautiful, talented people like Cher and Dolly Parton have had to do a considerable amount of work. But I do want to say that they also really engage the mind. They're both very intelligent, savvy businesswomen, and they do engage their mind and their spirit into their work as well. And I think, you know, we're just thinking about the body, mind, spirit. That to me is kind of like what I call my little trifecta, or what I call the peace, the purpose, the pleasure is kind of like the trifecta of getting older, is that we have that sense of inner peace that's not contingent on what other people are thinking or saying or projecting about us. It's just ours. We have a sense of purpose, a sense of why we get up in the morning and do things and feel fabulous. And then we have a sense of pleasure, a sense of play. And I honestly didn't have a whole lot of that when I was younger. So that is sort of a newer area for me as I age, is really enhancing and respecting the role of play and pleasure and leisure time and having fun.
And a feast of fun.
Feast of fun. And that is where prep and U equals U, especially in these last 10 years, has played a significant role in saying that we now, for the first time ever in my life, the first time beginning 10 years ago, had the ability to connect romantically, sexually with other partners without the fear of HIV being involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, Billy Porter says, I wish I had that.
Well, so he...
So today, Billy Porter, star of the television series Pose, has just revealed that he's been HIV positive for over a decade.
And he was living with a lot of shame about it for many, many years, and finally decided, I'm going to let go of that shame. And, you know, that's why I think it's very fortuitous that we had you on the podcast today, Damon, because you do so much work with HIV stigma and shame and shame in general.
I think if we want to cancel something in terms of cancel culture, let's cancel shame.
Well, that's the whole idea of pride, too, isn't it?
Well, so with Billy Porter, bless him for being open today and for doing what he needed to do to express himself and to, I'm sure he's going to inspire and save lives because of the statement that he made today. He really went into detail about this in the Hollywood Reporter, and it's a free article, but he tested positive in 2007. And that was an in-between time. We didn't yet have PrEP. We were just a couple of years away from PrEP. But what we did have at the time were the life-saving medications that he began using right away. And because of those medications, he has been, and in this article today, he said he has been undetectable. Undetectable means that when you're living with HIV and you're consistently taking the medications that are currently available, that your life expectancy will not be any less than someone who is HIV negative, and that you can have a full life. And Billy Porter, if anyone exemplifies living a full life, you can have a full life while using HIV medication to enhance the quality and quantity of your life. And when you're undetectable, you cannot sexually transmit HIV to other people. And he does have his husband is HIV negative. And he talks a little bit about that in Hollywood Reporter today. So it is, it's such a beautiful statement he made. And I'm mm-hmm. so glad he came out about that. And it just shows that our medical trajectory is really going in a good direction, where someone who is diagnosed in 2007 can be still fully living, loving, embracing life the way Billy Porter does today.
Without a doubt. Now, I think in the prep group you posted something recently, and it's something that's always kind of bugged me. Is, you know, when you say you disclose you're on prep on one of the hookup apps, but then you still feel like you need to ask somebody what their status is. What's the protocol these days? Because it almost seems like if you're on prep, then why? Like, should that matter?
Well, Mark, this is why I don't believe in shoulds, because I can't tell anyone what to care about.
Well, you know, part of it is, like, I've noticed a lot of people just say, like, I'm vaccinated, I got PrEP, let's go.
Right. I mean, that's my attitude. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm on PrEP, I don't give a shit what your status is. Mm-hmm. I'm vaccinated, mm-hmm. I don't care if you mm-hmm. are or not.
But I'm just saying, for somebody out there that's trying to have, like, a more welcoming experience to other people. You know what I mean? So, you know, because normally in the past you'd ask, hey, what's your status? Because you might use condoms. Maybe you figure it's not for you. You don't want to take that risk. But now with PrEP, what are you really risking?
So I mean, it doesn't make any medical sense for people to do that, Mark. And mm-hmm. it's not medically sound. It makes no sense whatsoever. So what if someone tells you they're living with HIV? Who cares? What if they are detectable? They're still not going to transmit HIV to you if you're using PrEP as directed. Mm-hmm. So what does it even matter? People do it not because it makes medical sense. People do it because they're afraid, because they're traumatized, because the stink of the HIV, the worst of the crisis, is still something we're carrying. A lot of people are carrying our age mm-hmm. and above. I mean, people sometimes feel like they need to ask that question to feel safe, even though it's not medically true.
How many A-listers right now in Hollywood, for example, have disclosed their HIV status?
Few. Very few.
Magic Johnson, Billy Porter.
I mean, you can count them in your hands. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And part of it is, like, even Billy Porter says, you know, like, he feared coming out because he was worried not just for what other people thought about him, but his career. And it says that actually playing Pray Tell on FX's Pose was critical in helping him come to terms with the real life diagnosis.
Right.
And, you know, for me, it's like, we have such little entertaining, joyful, playful depictions of HIV in television or in film. You know, it's usually like a secret, a big event. It's sad. And, you know, and certainly Pose has that, but it also has a lot of humor, a lot of spirit and fun. And, you know, like I was thinking about this in contrast to Halston, which the real life Halston didn't give a fuck about anything. Like, there's actually a documentary that came about Roy Halston in 2019 that's available on Amazon Prime, and you watch it and you're like, oh my God, I want to be Roy Halston. Like, he's so in love with life. He's zestful. He loves fashion. He loves cocaine. He loves sex, you know, and he had one marvelous time. Unfortunately, he, you know, died young, but it's like, he had very little regrets and was very unapologetic. And, you know,
the Netflix series is not like
and
that.
And the Netflix series, and this is a criticism of Ryan Murphy's series, is that he's addicted to the tropes of someone having a good time and having to pay the price for that.
Mm. Oh,
and same I think old, that, yeah. I think that's like internalized homophobia in terms of Ryan Murphy, but it's also, he understands that, you know, like in the tradition of the Hays Code, we can't present a happy homosexual or a homosexual who doesn't give any fucks without having them punished for it somehow.
Right.
You know, and so that's, Roy Halston in Ryan Murphy series is always crying, always having breakdowns, always like, please don't leave me. And Roy Halston in real life was like, get the fuck out of here. I'm having a marvelous time. If you can't handle
more
it.
More cocaine, please.
Rebecca, where's the coke?
There's a dead body in the ceiling. Who cares?
Well, that seems to me to be a very American puritanical trope that you have to pay the piper. If you're going to have pleasure, then there's going to has to be punishment.
Yeah.
And I think that's presented in every form of fiction and non-fictional entertainment, is that, you know, you got to have a party, you got to have a crash. That is not how I live my life. I'm all about the pleasure, not the crashing.
Or the cocaine.
Or the cocaine. That's not my thing. But it's a trope, and yeah. it's too bad that that's there. I recently said in my 50 lessons of 50, I'm going to die someday. And I was writing about the fact that I'm going to die someday. And I actually have no problem saying that. I will die someday. The body will die someday. I'm not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of not living while I'm still here. So my intention is to live, like Billy Porter says, live, but to make sure that I'm making the most of whatever time I've got, because I'd rather die younger and look back on a life that was filled with love and fun and connection than live 100 years saying, what was that about?
I just want to see more queer characters everywhere, and I want us to embody Dominique Jackson's or Roy Halston or Billy Porter. Just be these, like, you know, zestful, thrilling, loving, joyful, unapologetic queer people, and, you know, make the haters eat it.
Well, and I think Pose really showed that as a commodity, that model is salient. And hopefully it's not just this one time, this once in a decade thing. But Pose showed that you could put a show like that on a cable television network and it made money. It did well. It did so well in the ratings.
And it got so all these, they canceled it.
Now, well, so my understanding, and maybe you guys know better than I do, that it was originally thought out as a 5-season series. And then I think because of COVID, I don't really understand why it only became a 3-season series.
I'm not really sure either. I'm not sure what the background of it, but it did make money, but not for Janet Mock. She's just like, I only made $40,000 an episode.
And then she put her boyfriend on blast.
I know.
But it did show the representation like that is out there. If you put the actors and the writers and the money together, that you can create a project that is salient. And a lot of times Hollywood doesn't, you know, they won't pick up on a project about anyone until they've seen, well, they did it with Pose, so now we can make a movie about people who are living the transgender experience, and maybe we can make some money about that.
If you had Janet Mock as a client, you heard her speech at the red carpet event. A very complicated emotional moment, and it also speaks to a lot of the division between trans and non-binary people and cisgender queer people. And part of it is, like, you know, there's a lot of people who align and understand where Janet Mock is coming from. But there's also other people who are like, girl, she is burning bridges. Is like Angel Curie, her boyfriend, is like, you know, who plays Little Poppy. What's going on with that? Like, she's basically like humiliating him.
Yeah. If Janet Mock was a client, I'd first I'd ask, how are you feeling? And I'd want to know, what were your intentions? What were you hoping was going to happen? Did you plan that? And what were your intentions with that? And do you feel like the outcome reflected your intentions? And if so, no problem. Mm-hmm. But if the outcome was not reflective of your intentions, let's look there and see what was the gap? What didn't work out there?
That makes sense. I mean, I was here for it. I was just like, if this is how you feel, you created this helped create this wonderful piece of art, and this is how you feel, you need to let people know about it. You know?
I would say if that was the intention,
okay.
But if the intention was to continue to have work and continue to get hired in that industry, I'm not sure it served that. And I'm not saying one is good or bad or right or wrong. I'd just be really curious to know what she was intending to do.
Well, like, you know, in terms of looking back at Janet Mock's entertainment and media career, she's had moments where she was very well served by speaking truth to power. When she and that CNN, what was the name of that conservative guy who recently quit?
Piers Morgan.
When she,
don't say his name.
I know. Wash my ears out with soap. But, you know, when she spoke out against his transphobia, you know, there was a lot of public sympathy for her, and it actually opened up doors. In this case, I'm not sure that is necessarily what's happening.
Well, you're talking about gatekeeping, right?
Yeah.
And so there is gatekeeping that happens in Hollywood, but isn't, you know, her speaking about this kind of stuff is supposed to break down some of those gates. Will it or will it not? Depends on, you know, is the community going to support her or not?
We're the only
and I say yes,
LGBT news media that's talking about it at this point. no one is like, you know, it's being buried under the table. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's very unfortunate because I think she had a really strong point that's worth mentioning, which is we just don't have even enough diversity, enough representation, enough fun. You know, it's like I love Roy Halston's series. And at the same time, I'm like, I'm right there with his family going, you know, why are you portraying Roy Halston as this like, you know, emotional train wreck? It's like the first couple of episodes, spoiler alert, is so much fun. And then the series is now going into like, oh, I'm doing too many drugs. I'm ruining my life. You know, and I'm just like, oh, my God.
Well, we all have struggles. And I'm sure he had struggles. And he had financial struggles and struggles with cocaine.
We're having financial struggles. We're having struggles.
But we still have joy.
Are we breaking down and crying on the carpet on our very expensive, luxurious carpet? Or are we just like, you know, breathing a sigh of disappointment?
$300.
I know. I'm talking about Roy Halston's collar carpet. You know, I probably shouldn't be calling him Roy, but I love the fact that his first name was Roy, you know.
Well,
Roy! Hey, Roy! His mother was really mad that she called himself Halston because the correct pronunciation of the family name is Halston.
Halston?
Halston. Ooh. And I was like, ooh, that just hurts my ears.
That's interesting. Wow.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, a part of me doing this podcast is I collect eccentric, quirky, queer, gay men like some people collect Barbie dolls, you know, and in my mind.
That's scary, Falstaff.
Well, in my mind and my soul and my heart, it's like, I'm so glad that like America's fallen in love with Roy Halston again. And it's like, you know, because we had Quentin Crisp. We've had, you know, so many interesting, fun, weird people. And it's like on this podcast over the years. And it's like, it's like we need to look forward to being old and silver and senior. You know, it's like that's something so we can be like, you know, eccentric, lovable grandpas.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, getting back you two and what you've been doing and, for 16 years now. Is monumental. And where's the story about that? Now, if Ryan Murphy made the story, it would be like, oh, it was a tale of excess and World of Wonder. And then they crashed and they fell and they cried on the floor. And, you know,
there
would be some tragic thing.
Let me just clarify. I'm the one picking up the sobbing, coked out drag queens off the floor. I'm saying I'm the Gail King to, you know, who's keeping it together during the interview while the guest is throwing a temper tantrum and threatening to assault me. Just for the record, I'm the one who's sitting there just, you know, keeping it together. And part of
but
it is
the
like,
truth is reality.
Yeah, yeah.
Reality rarely ever makes a really interesting story. But the reality is that you two have been pioneering this area for 16 years, which, in my opinion, the Guinness Book of World Records is a world record. And I'd let them come and fight me and pay me $3,000 to fight me on that, since I know they're going to charge you $3,000 to even try to apply to find out. But you two are leaders. And we don't, I agree with you. I'm so glad there's more representation. But I think there's a lot of here and now, aside from Halston, aside from the movies made about Elton John or Freddie Mercury, there's so many heroes and entertainers and amazing forces of energy in the LGBTQ community today that are changing our world for the better today.
Without
and there's so
doubt.
Many people who I know, and I've talked a lot about in the 50 Lessons of 50 about so many of the heroes I know who are over 50, who are changing the world right now while they're alive and breathing. And we don't really see stories. Usually somebody has to be dead before anyone will even, you know, biographize them or tell their story, which is weird to me. But
Did
there's so many wonderful people around us.
This is George Takei, and I'm still here.
Yes.
You know, that's what's been so great is like, you know, Ian McKellen and, you know, it's like just, of course, Elton John and all these wonderful eccentric Billy Porter, you know, it's like I want so many more. I feel like you got my appetite. You gave me an appetizer and I want the meal. I want dessert. I want a side salad with croutons, please.
And we have that. I mean, again, what I think is great about the social media age is that we do have more exposure to podcasts, to people with ideas, to credible writers, journalists who are writing about these issues and saying there is another way that, that we can live beside that whole sad trope of like, oh, okay, you're going to be tragic. And, you know, if you're successful, you're going to have to pay for having pleasure, that there's so many other stories out there now. And, you know, TV and Pose is just one of the many ways that people are getting their stories told. Right. Hopefully that will continue and Netflix will continue to sponsor and cable TV will continue to sponsor these stories. But I just think there's so much to look forward to. And the joyfulizing part that Mark referred to earlier is just this idea that what we tend to do is always look for, oh my God, what's going to go wrong or what's going to happen next or what's the next big horrible pandemic that's going to wipe us out. And I just want to give as much attention and energy to the idea of joyfulizing. Instead of always thinking of what can go wrong, can we also give some attention to what can go right? We are on the verge of a new decade. I just turned 50. Sorry if my phone's beeping. But things are, you know, a lot of people are really waking up in our society to the injustices. As a white guy, I'm learning stuff that I never knew was happening and being more galvanized and mobilized to protest and do things about that. I think there's a lot we can look forward to in the years ahead. And I just think if we spend all of our time on social media criticizing and attacking and judging others, we're just going to stay in that realm of he's wrong, he's bad, he's too much. You know, that leads to depression, that leads to suffering. And we don't have to go that way.
Mm. Damon, thank you so much for giving us filling our cup with spirit,
with purpose, power, and pleasure.
Yes.
Purpose, power, pleasure ahead. And I encourage people, you know, let's keep this conversation going. You know, maybe people are listening to this thinking he's full of shit. Well, great. You know, comment on the podcast. Let's have a talk about that.
Absolutely. Well,
I think that, you know, the main issue is with all these self-help podcasts or inspirational messages out there is that they tend to be very broad in the advice they're giving and not very specific actionable steps. And you know, that's where I'm trying to go.
Well, let's do an actionable step.
Well, that's what we're doing. Yeah. So in terms of, you know, that's what Let's Grow Big Together is. It's like, literally it's going to be like, this is the food you got to eat. This is what you got to do with your phone. This is what you got to do with your relationships. It's steps. None of this, like, you know, well, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger.
I agree. And that's why in 50 Lessons of 50, which eventually is going to be a book, I go into very much detail about my own self-care. I can't tell anyone else what to do because I don't believe in doing that. And I don't believe in shoulds, but I kind of go, especially in lesson 15, go into more detail about my mental and spiritual path. And I'm false. I know you hate that word, so I'm kind of using it intentionally. Spiritual, my energy,
it's just tossed around sometimes with very little meaning.
And that's what I mean by superficial aphorisms. Like the word spirituality is tossed because it doesn't come with steps. It's like, be like, you know, lose weight, be healthier. It's like, well, you know, it's not like I woke up today and said, this is how I want to look. This is how I happen to look. You know, and so when we can give people specific steps, when we can say this is the direction to go in, then when we, and this is the danger with speaking in religious terms tend to abstract all the stuff that makes us whole, because, you know, the church wants to have the monopoly, or the, you know, the vitamin salesperson on YouTube wants to have that monopoly.
Absolutely. And that's why for me, spirituality is a very individual, private process. Religion is something you do in groups that encourages conformity and groupthink. For me, a spiritual practice is just getting my energy calibrated in a way that helps me to feel empowered and filled with purpose and ready to have fun. And I talk about these tools specifically in lesson 15. But again, just really briefly, it's about breathing, or some people may say meditating, but just breathing in a very specific way that opens my body and my mind. I do a lot of journal writing and a lot of reading. There's so much good material that's relevant to the struggles, the political struggles and emotional struggles that are happening in the world today. Tina Turner just finally came out with a book detailing her wellness practice that she has been doing since 1973. She's never specified her practice before until now. It's called Happiness Becomes You. And she just came out with this book at age 81. So that is one of the ways that I take care of myself as well. So I also am not just using like general aphorisms, like, you know, party it up, boys. But it's like, let's be really specific. Let's be concrete and let's be mindful and loving about how we embrace our personal power, purpose, and pleasure in the years and decades to come.
Yeah. Rock and roll all night, party every other day.
Harm reduction, baby. Harm reduction.
Who said this? Let's wrap this up here. Cher, bodybuilder, drag queen, or Nazi? Fitness, if it came in a bottle, everybody would have a good body.
Bodybuilder?
Cher did.
Oh. What? Oh my God.
The trick is Cher said all of these things.
She said everything at one point. That must have been during her early 90s exercise tape phase.
Yes. She used to do ads for a gym, right?
She used to be like a spokesperson for one gym chain, but the chain kept being sold, and her contract with them got sold along with it. So she would just do new ads all the time.
And she would walk on a treadmill in high heels, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it went?
Right. That was great. And unfortunately, that led to the world of hair care and infomercials, which kind of sunk her in for a while there.
Oh, my God. You gotta make the money.
Yep.
She was what the kids would call today an influencer. David, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Happy 50th birthday. I hope this next decade and the rest of your life is absolutely fantastic. And please come back on soon.
Well, I will come anywhere you boys tell me to. I love you both.
I'm a
thank
back,
you
baby.
So
I'm
much back. For providing this forum for me and for so many others over the years. I love you both so much.
Love you too.
Take care,
you.
Damon. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Bye.
Damon L. Jacobs lives in New York, New York. You can find his 50 lessons on aging at 50lessonsof50.com.
So it's a bit of a mouthful there with that blog post, but we have it in the notes. So if you just scroll down, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, the URL to the show is there. If you just started listening to Feast of Fun, smash that subscribe button or follow now. Now it's follow us. Follow us wherever you are subscribed, wherever you, YouTube, Instagram, Snap. We're not on Snapchat, but Twitter, Facebook. Follow us on Facebook groups, Feast of Fun.
Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun and become a plus member at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We are moving forward with you.
Remember, age is just a number you sometimes have to lie about.
If you want to.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.